Welcome to the Placebo Magic Podcast, the podcast about imaginative self-care for skeptics. I'm your host, Durmok, the wizard and peasant lord of the vast 10-acre realm of Hobdur, also known as Garrison Benson. Hello everyone, Durmok here. I hope you enjoy this formerly Patreon-exclusive bonus episode from the archives, and if you'd like to listen to the entire back catalog of bonus episodes without waiting for them to hit this main podcast feed, check out patreon.com/placebomagic. That's magic with a CK on the end. Greetings, Placebo Mages, and welcome to the Placebo Magic Podcast, Patreon exclusive bonus show. Today we're going to be talking about creating an imaginary friend, or tulpa. So this is a process that I've just embarked on, and so I'm going to share a little bit about my thoughts in entering that process and in kind of explain some of the background behind that. So I've had this on my to-do list for quite a while, ever since I got interested in placebo magic and like started the podcast, and I've had this in mind as something I could do as an experiment to create an imaginary friend and then kind of learn something from that about the nature of religion and sort of connect the dots between psychology and religion or occultism a little more, and how people come to believe that fictional beings are actually real beings. And there's this internet community centered around this concept of a tulpa. And a tulpa is basically a very vivid imaginary friend that sort of seems to have a mind of its own. And this community is devoted to the practice of creating tulpas. Some people do it to alleviate loneliness. Some people do it because they feel like they need to explore their sense of identity, and that maybe having a plural identity is a better fit for them than having a singular identity. Anyway, they have a specific set of practices that you can follow in order to create your own tulpa. And this community, most of the people believe that this is just a psychological trick. You know, it's a placebo magic compatible explanation. There are some people who believe in this sort of metaphysical explanation for how it works, where you're actually kind of creating another soul, similar to in occult circles when you create a servitor or an egregore or something. But I'm going to be approaching this obviously from the psychological explanation standpoint, except for the metaphors that I'm using. But I had this on my list for a while, but I have been putting it off for two main reasons. The first reason is that in that tulpa community, they are very, they caution you not to undertake this without knowing that you really want to do it. And basically the idea is that, first of all, once you have created a tulpa, it's not necessarily easy to get rid of it. And number two, when you do get rid of it, that's going to create a sense of loss and something missing, at least for a while. You're going to have a kind of a grieving process. And also, there's a book called DIY Magic by Anthony Alvarado, where he talks about his experience in one of the chapters. He talked about his experience accidentally discovering this phenomenon, which he called a mental golem, I think. And again, in that resource, he kind of cautions against You know, he warns that it's not for the faint of heart, and you have to kind of really know that you want to do this before you do it. So I've kind of hesitated for those reasons, and because growing up, I had what I would describe as an accidental tulpa, which is a phenomenon that they document in these online communities, which is that you have a tulpa, but that you didn't intentionally create. And for me, that was God. It was my concept of God that was sort of riding along in my head all the time, judging all of my actions and thoughts. And, you know, this conception of God was, you know, very strict, judgmental, humorless, relatively devoid of compassion, and so on. That's just kind of the version of God that I internalized from going to church as a kid. I know for other people that might not be their experience, but that was my experience, and it was very difficult to get rid of that. Even after, you know, I became an atheist, I still had the lingering just impressions of guilt and judgment and whatnot. And my freedom from that was hard won mostly through practicing mindfulness meditation and, you know, creating interior silence and observing my thoughts and feelings without judgment and that kind of thing. So I've been a little hesitant to, you know, now that I've gotten rid of my accidental tulpa, more or less, I'm hesitant to, you know, create another tulpa. So yeah, I've been putting it off, but then, the other day I listened to an episode of Hidden Brain called Secret Friends, which Hidden Brain is an NPR podcast. If you don't know, that's kind of about psychology. So in this episode, they shared about this phenomenon of people having sort of imaginary friends or unseen people living inside their head that were very supportive and encouraging and helpful. So one story was about this girl who had dyslexia, and her teacher in elementary school pulled her aside one day and told her about all these different successful people who had dyslexia. And one of them that she happened to mention was Cher. And so this girl had this voice of Cher after that would, whenever she was feeling discouraged about her academic life, she would hear the voice of Cher inside of her head giving her encouragement. And, you know, saying things like, oh, well, you know, if I could do it, then you certainly can. And things like that keep her, you know, studying hard and whatnot. And another story that was on this podcast was about a pastor who had this practice of writing out dialogues between himself and Jesus. And Jesus would sort of help him to dig into his emotions. And, you know, growing up, I had a lot of, I heard a lot of stories about people who had this very sort of intimate relationship with Jesus, where they would, you know, walk with Jesus and sit with Jesus and you know, it was almost as if Jesus was walking around with them throughout their day. I remember there was one story about this guy who used to sit across from an empty chair and imagine that Jesus was sitting in the empty chair, just having a conversation with him. And when that guy passed away, there was an empty chair next to his deathbed, which had been put there so that his loved ones could, you know, sit with him. But nobody was in the room with him when he passed. But he actually, right before he died, he leaned out of the bed and rested his arms and his head on the chair, almost as if he was, like, you know, putting his head in Jesus' lap in his final moments. So all those stories kind of made me reconsider this and think, well, maybe this could actually be could be an asset, as long as I really make sure that this imaginary friend is compassionate, understanding, emotionally intelligent, non-judgmental, those kind of things. And as long as I sort of make sure that my imaginary friend has the necessary respect for my boundaries, that it doesn't feel like an invasive thought pattern. So I went back and kind of re-familiarize myself with the Tulpamancy community and what their practices are. So the first step for me was to sort of brainstorm what I wanted my imaginary friend to be like. So first I jotted down a few different personalities that I wanted to sort of throw into the melting pot and use those as kind of a baseline for where I wanted to start. So I wrote down Mr. Rogers, Thich Nhat Hanh, Yoda, Uncle Iroh, Jiminy Cricket, and Gandalf. So from Mr. Rogers, I really liked his compassion, his always seeking understanding, his gentle way of speaking, his silliness and appreciation for fantasy and make-believe, his humility, his sort of determination to make the world a better place. A lot of similar things with Thich Nhat Hanh, who is a Zen Buddhist monk who writes a lot about mindfulness meditation, emotional intelligence, a focus on slowing down, trying to gain understanding, trying to, you know, cultivate compassion. And Thich Nhat Hanh in particular is really focused on, you know, mindfulness, on being mindful in the present moment all the time. Yoda, a lot of similarities there too, but with Yoda, I really liked the kind of, just in terms of the look and feel of Yoda, the absurdity and the silliness of this little green puppet man who is actually a really wise warrior, and he has this really silly voice and a really goofy personality, at least when you see him in Empire Strikes Back and we first got to know Yoda, you know, in real world chronology. And I like also this idea that Yoda, when he's like riding on Luke's back and kind of talking to Luke and helping Luke train, I thought it would be cool if my Tulpa was small enough that it could ride around with me. And, you know, especially on days when I really need some extra boost of encouragement or understanding or guidance, I could sort of imagine this character sitting on my shoulder or riding on my hat or what have you. And then I also really like about Yoda, the thing is that Yoda is the wise mentor figure, but he does make mistakes. And there are moments when his students have to transcend his teaching and realize that he's wrong. But Yoda is able to then learn from his mistakes. So he can continue to be a wise mentor figure because he's able to continue to learn and grow. Like in Return of the Jedi, Yoda tells Luke that he has to kill Darth Vader. And Yoda's wrong. Yoda doesn't believe that he can be saved, but Luke does. And it turns out Luke is right. But Yoda learned from that mistake. And when we see him in The Last Jedi, or, you know, his ghost, Yoda is still able to be a wise mentor for Luke. And so I wanted that aspect because, you know, the idea that I had as a kid about God was that God was always right, that God was perfect. And so my imaginary friend version of God didn't really have any room for growth or humility or admitting to making a mistake. And so I really wanted that to be a thing. And also just for the sort of sustainability of this tulpa, I thought if it does turn out that it's given me bad advice, then nice if it can just have the humility to learn from that and then continue to serve as my advisor after that. Uncle Iroh is a character from Avatar The Last Airbender, the animated show, who is he's the bad guy's uncle, basically. And the bad guy, one of the bad guys, Prince Zuko, is going on this kind of misguided quest to capture the good guy. And Uncle Iroh is sort of Zuko's conscience in a way, where Uncle Iroh is, he's always by Zuko's side, and he loves Zuko, but he understands that Zuko is on the wrong path, and he's going to stick by Zuko's side to keep trying to steer him to the right path and to try to minimize the damage that Zuko is doing to other people along the way. And Uncle Iroh is really a joyful character. He loves his tea. He appreciates the simple things. He appreciates music and dancing. And, but yeah, the main thing I wanted from that character in particular was this, like, he's always going to stand by your side no matter what, which is not something I can say about Yoda, because Yoda, as soon as Anakin Skywalker turned to the dark side, Yoda was like, well, I guess we have to murder him. And even in, you know, after Obi-Wan failed to kill Anakin, then their strategy shifted to like, well, I guess we better teach Anakin's son to kill him. You know, we got to trick him into killing him by not telling him that it's his dad. And, you know, Yoda just never really thought like, huh, I wonder if we could actually save Anakin from the dark side. So I think Uncle Iroh would have done the, you know, done what Luke did. So, Jiminy Cricket, basically I just put him on there because of this idea of he's like a little mentor guide figure that is small enough that he can like ride along on your shoulder or, you know, on your head or whatever. And then on Gandalf, I mean, most of what I appreciated about Gandalf was already kind of covered by the other characters I wrote down, but, you know, he's very wise, very powerful, but he is humble. He is joyful. He appreciates the small things. And one thing that Gandalf has that the other ones don't necessarily have is that Gandalf is very kind of scholarly. He loves like digging through old books and finding interesting things. And but yeah, anyway, so those are my characters like during the melting pot. And then I wrote down some personality traits that I wanted my tulpa to possess also. I wrote down silly, compassionate, moral, seeking understanding, respecting silence, humor-loving, respecting boundaries. So yeah, with regard to respecting silence and respecting boundaries, I really wanted those because, like I said, I don't want I don't want this to become sort of a version of having invasive thoughts or intrusive thoughts. That I want this tulpa to have his own life and respect my interior silence and only bother me when I'm willing to be bothered or when I want to be bothered. So then I got to thinking about, okay, given all that, what should he or she look like? So I thought, well, I think about 3 inches tall is sort of the ideal size because I can picture the tulpa, you know, hanging out on my desk. I can picture him riding around on my shoulder, riding to work with me in my backpack, those kind of things. So I thought, well, maybe it should be a fairy. And I thought, well, you know, I like the idea in the Legend of Zelda games, how like the fairies or some of the other guide characters, they sort of inhabit Link's body when they're not doing stuff. Like Navi, the fairy, can sort of go into Link's body and come out. And in particular, she'll come out when she wants to talk to Link. But I mean, it's an interesting idea and it makes a lot of sense. But for me, I didn't want to go with this metaphor that this conception that the tulpa is sharing my body with me. I didn't want to have that feeling like there's two people competing for this, for one body or one brain. So that concept of being, you know, the character that just kind of gets sucked back into your body when it's not out in the world doing stuff, I don't really like. However, I did like the idea of flying, because it seems like if I want this character to be able to sort of be on my table or on my shoulder or on my or walking along beside me outside, that it's going to need to be fairly mobile to be able to navigate the world of, you know, normal size furniture and such. So I thought about maybe like a crow or, you know, something like a fairy, but I don't know. I guess I just, I had a different idea based on, you know, inspired by Yoda again, which is that maybe instead of flying, it could be like a Jedi where it mostly walks around, but it can do some really sweet jumps so that it can sort of navigate, you know, getting up onto a table or getting up onto my shoulder without having to use like a grappling hook or something. But it still has the sort of physicality of walking and having, you know, footsteps. So from there, I was like, well, should it be like a little sort of anthropomorphic animal, like a little toad man or frog man, or maybe like some kind of a little golem, like a wood golem or something. Anyway, what I settled on was something sort of like a goblin slash elf thing with a 3 inches tall, hairless. It's got a kind of bumpy or warty skin, blue skin, sort of a light chalky blue, pointy ears, a big bulbous nose, sort of like an Icelandic troll doll. And he wears wizard robes and carries a little staff because, like Obi-Wan Kenobi or like a lot of mentor figures in fiction, I wanted this character to be a reflection of what I can become or what I want to become. So he's gonna kind of mirror my same archetype as far as I'm trying to be like a wizard. So he's gonna be a wizard that, you know, can train me to be a wizard. So yeah, he's about 3 inches tall, but he can jump sometimes. Also, I think he can occasionally levitate too if he sort of, you know, crosses his legs and, you know, does that sort of tropey levitating position. Then I thought, well, he needs a voice. So I wanted the voice to be a little bit silly. So I thought back to recently I listened to this audio drama of The Hobbit that came out, decades back, long before the movies came out, the Peter Jackson movies. And in that audio drama, all of the dwarves had this very goofy voice. Especially I remember Thorin Oakenshield, the main dwarf, that had this voice that was sort of like, "Well, hello, Mr. Baggins. My name is Thorin Oakenshield." Very different from the movie versions where it's like, "Oh, we are angry dwarves, rulers of the mining stuff." Anyway, you know, they have really deep, deep, manly voices in the Peter Jackson movies, but in this audio drama, it was very sort of, very much like a, more like a Keebler dwarf, if that was a thing. So that's the voice that I wanted to go with. It just seemed like a good fit. So that's the voice I'm going to be picturing in my head while I interact with my imaginary friend here. Now, another thing that a lot of people in the tulpamancy community do is they create what's called a wonderland for their tulpa. And this is kind of a fictional or imagined landscape that the tulpa inhabits and that you can also sort of go to in your imagination to interact with the tulpa on its own turf. And I'm not sure exactly why this is helpful, but my theory is that for imagined beings in general, having a habitat helps them to feel more real in the brain, whether that is, you know, ancient deities having temples, like, you know, the ancient Israelites had their like tabernacle tent they would bring around with them everywhere, and it was, you know, God dwelt among them. Whether you're talking about fairy houses in the sort of Scandinavian world, or you know, ghosts that live in haunted houses, or the dead inhabiting heaven or hell, I think that imagined beings feel more alive if you can sort of conceptualize where they exist, where they are inhabiting. And I think that's just my gut. I don't know if that's a sign. That's not something I know that the science or anything else behind. I've just my that's my guess. But for my tulpa, instead of creating a fantasy landscape, I decided to sort of I decided that I'm going to build a fairy house that he can inhabit on my land that is, you know, somewhere outside of my house, and do that rather than have him live in like an imagined dimension. Now, that said, since I haven't got around to building the fairy house yet, for the time being, I'm just kind of imagining that he is from an alternate dimension version of Hobdur, and he's, when we're done hanging out, then he'll go back to his own dimension until the next time. But yeah, my ultimate plan is that he'll move to my dimension and live in a fairy house. Also, I want to build like maybe a little chair or rocking chair or something that he can hang out in when we're having our little sessions. So moving on to that, the process here to create a tulpa now, after doing this conception work that I've done, is to do what is called forcing or forcing sessions. Now, forcing sessions are, it's kind of like a type of meditation where you you do like an imagined conversation with your tulpa. Now, the reason it's called forcing is that initially you're going to have to basically carry both sides of the conversation. You're going to speak for yourself and you're going to put words in your tulpa's mouth. But what you're doing in the process is you're kind of training your brain in how this character would speak and how it would react to things and whatnot. So you can do this either by just kind of closing your eyes and visualizing the conversation. You could do it by speaking out loud, either just your side of the conversation or both sides. What I decided to do to start out is doing it on paper. And I have two different colors of pen, a black pen for my own voice and a blue pen for my imaginary friend's voice. And that way I can kind of slow down and think through how he would react in a way that matches the personality that I'm trying to capture. Compassion and understanding and humor and an appreciation for the simple pleasures and those kind of things. But after I do this on paper for a little while, then I might try to switch to doing it where I'll probably try to do it where I say my side of the conversation out loud, and then I try to imagine in my head the responses, which is more similar to, you know, prayer in a lot of ways. So yeah, I hope that I can. I did my first forcing session this morning, and I think it went pretty well. And the cool thing about this is that, I mean, the tulpa community online has this ultimate goal of making this really intensely vivid imaginary friend. And even to the ultimate goal really is like what they call imposition, which is where you're actually able to willfully hallucinate this character both visually and auditorily. Yeah, you can actually literally see and hear the character. Now, not that many people are able to achieve that very often, but that is kind of considered the ultimate goal. And I think that's great for those folks, but when you kind of cross-reference that community's experiences and guidelines with other phenomena that are similar to that, and this whole idea of, you know, imaginary friends and what I've called soul puppets on the podcast in the past, or spirits, I think that there's a lot of gray area in between, you know, just an abstract conception of a character and a full-on tulpa that feels like it's a whole separate person that you can even hallucinate in the environment. I think there's a lot of gray area in between that I don't necessarily feel like I have to take it all the way to the those end goalposts to have a meaningful and useful experience. And if I decide that I've gotten to a point where I feel like I learned what I wanted to learn, experience what I wanted to experience, then I'll probably stop there. But I can still keep my imaginary friend around. We just won't have as intense of a connection. He'll just be somebody that I, you know, maybe at some point I'll just start to be a relationship where I just say hey to him in passing and meet up with him for coffee every couple of weeks instead of having this like really intense day-to-day interaction. But yeah, I mean, I think with my approach, what I'm trying to do is make it so that even if I only did a few forcing sessions, that these, and they still wouldn't be a waste of my time. So I'm kind of making my forcing session double as just journaling, like to help me process my feelings. So I'm sharing my, you know, some of my emotions with my imaginary friend, and then he's helping me to sort through them and asking me questions to probe deeper and to look at things more thoughtfully, mindfully, and so on. So that even if he never does take on that real feeling of being a real character, that it'll still be a useful way to spend my time in any case. That's kind of my thought process. Cause I don't want to, in the Tulpa community, they warn you constantly about how long this stuff takes. So I just didn't want it to be something where I felt like it was all or nothing, you know, in terms of my time. So yeah, I wanted to do this bonus show episode just as I'm starting the process of creating an imaginary friend. And then at some point, I will hopefully make an episode on the main podcast feed where I'm talking about it from the other side. But I thought if I share about this in the bonus show, then maybe from time to time, I can give little updates about it. And then if you're really interested, then, you know, you can listen to all the episodes together along with the episode of the main show and kind of get this before and after dynamic going on and see how my thoughts on this changed, how the imaginary friend changed from my initial conception as he took on life. And yeah, I hope this has been helpful going forward. Yeah, I'm going to try to keep doing these forcing sessions a few times a week. And then also just do this more of what they call passive forcing of just sort of picturing my imaginary friend, you know, interacting with me, interacting with the environment, picture his reactions to things. You can also do something where you read books with your tulpa or to your tulpa, and then you sort of imagine their reactions to things. I suppose you could also do that where you're just watching Netflix with your tulpa and you just imagine how he or she is reacting to things. So anywho, yeah, that's what's the next steps for me. And I hope this has been interesting or useful or something. And if you go to the show notes, which will be on Patreon, I'll put a link to the Tulpa community on Reddit that I've been culling resources from, if you want to look more into that. Our next episode of the main show is going to be an interview with Mark Green, the founder of Atheopaganism. Just did the interview last night and it went pretty well, so I still have to edit that, but it should be up in the next few days as of my publishing this bonus show. So you can look forward to that. And if you want to get in touch with me, email me at farmcodegary@protonmail.com and let me know what you think. Thank you so much for being a Patreon supporter. And remember, magic is a metaphor, and metaphor is magical. You can find the Placebo Magic Podcast and my poetry on the web at garrisonbenson.com. Leave a voicemail for the show by calling 989-318-4118. Music is by Kevin MacLeod of incompetech.com and licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. You can support the show by giving us a review on your podcast app of choice, sharing an episode with a friend, or becoming a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/placebomagic. Patreon supporters also gain access to our Patreon-exclusive bonus show.
Remember, magic is a metaphor, and metaphor is magical.